Welcome to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast, where we focus on the people, the products, and the process of e-commerce selling today. Here's your host, Stephen Peterson.
Welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. This is episode 27, Brian Young. In this part of the podcast, this segment, we spent some time discussing, you know, how Brian got to where he is. We also spent some time talking about our experience at CES, Jim Cockrum's CES 3 conference in Louisville, and what we were able to get from it, and more importantly, how we were able to use it in our business. And we get to the point where we start to discuss Brian's business model, which I think you'll be very, very impressed with. So let's get into the podcast. All right. Welcome back to the e-commerce Momentum Podcast. And tonight's guest, it's, you know, I met him again at Jim Cockrum's CES, and I can't say enough about the conference. You know, there was a great line of speakers, and, you know, Dan Miller was amazing, and Jim Cockrum's great, of course, and there were a bunch of other people, Gary Baird, and just great stuff. But I'll be honest with you, a lot of the activity happened for me in the lounge, or I hate to say it, the bar, too. And this is where I got to meet Brian Young. So, hey, welcome, Brian.
Hey, thanks for having me. Completely honored to be on your show.
Oh, that's very kind of you. You know, when we were sitting around in that location in Kentucky drinking Kentucky bourbon beer, which was very good, I must admit. A little strong for me. But, you know, the conversations were incredible. I mean, it started out with four of us kind of just sitting down there having a conversation. Next thing I knew, there were eight of us. And then a whole group came in with you, and all of a sudden we were 10 to 12 to 13 of us. And it was just – it was amazing for me to have that level of conversation. How about you? Did you get a lot from it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think – like, I think you nailed it. I think the speakers are great. I think the conference venue as a whole was good, but the networking was incredible. In fact, I think my takeaway from the entire event is, you know, networking is where it's at. I was able to encourage some people, but more often than not, be encouraged by so many sellers that are doing things different than me. So it was great.
It's a great way to put it. You know, you encouraged others. I had somebody pull me over into a conversation. A couple had some challenges, and I know I was able to help them move forward. And yet, just like you said, I'm sitting there having a conversation with you and just listening to what you're doing and just blown away with it. And you moved me forward. So, you know, that's a really great way to look at it. As a matter of fact, I'm going to Ecom Chicago now because I really enjoyed myself at CES. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to go again to another one. So I'm looking forward to that too. So, Brian, you are, you know, I'm going to give you that term. You are a mega seller now. You had a great year last year, but you're having a 4X year. You know, that doesn't come easy. That's clearly built. I always like to describe it as a foundation, right? You established a foundation. So let's go back and let's talk about your foundation, how you started in the business, or, you know, even further back. Did you come from an entrepreneurial family?
No, not necessarily. I think my parents are both white collar, you know, suburban type family is what I came from. And the entrepreneurial spirit wasn't really there. But I think at an early age, you know, I kind of picked up on it somewhere. I'm not really sure where. And I just wanted to sell stuff and kind of got pointed in a lot of directions that didn't lead to a lot of success, but ultimately found the success I was looking for with the opportunities that we have on Amazon.
Now, you started, like most people do, it seems to, with Amazon specifically, is selling books, right? I mean, it's a lot of, you know, and you mentioned that you'd started in college. So walk us through how that went about.
Yeah, so it was just me selling back my textbooks that I'd purchased at, you know, a fraction of the cost that I paid for them on half.com, which is eBay's. It was kind of like that was a place where you went to buy books, I think, before Amazon really kind of got in there and took over the market. I did well for a while. It was just books here or there that I'd accumulated. And then I worked for a pawn shop, actually, and I ran their eBay business. So what they couldn't sell on the sales floor, I'd sell, and they give me a 20% commission after the sale.
All right, now I'm interested. See, now we're going off the script because now I've always wondered how a pawn shop works. So, Sure. So walk us through how a pawn shop works. Because I know I'm following Steve Rakin as he's traveling the eastern part of the United States, and he's hitting a ton of pawn shops and negotiating with them. And a couple times he's run into they don't want to negotiate because they're selling on eBay. And so walk us through how that works.
Yeah, I mean, basically the manager will look at the products and determine if they're marketable, you know, locally. So people came in, they wanted a loan, they'd get the loan, and they wouldn't pay off the loan in time. And so then the store manager, the owner, would be left with all this inventory, all these products to sell. And so some of the stuff he just realized, I'm not going to be able to market them locally. So he wanted to sell them online, so internationally. And he didn't really know how to do it. I had kind of tinkered it in, here and there. So he decided to bring me on board, and that's kind of where we went. So we were selling, like, you know, $1,000 golf clubs and giant inflatable 12-person rafts, like just things that are just crazy. They have good value, but he just couldn't sell in this brick-and-mortar store.
It's just incredible, though. What an experience, though. So you really saw the gamut of things. Did you sell for him on Amazon back then?
No, just eBay. That was it.
I think eBay.
Yeah, not Amazon. Yeah.
That's fascinating to me, and I know there's most of them do it because you go in there and they show a picture. Oh, this is what it's selling for on eBay and that kind of thing. I've never had much success going in and buying from one. I think you really have to know what you're doing. So really interesting. Well, that's neat. So that took you to a place where you graduated college and you just immediately jumped into this full time.
I worked for a while, but my wife and I were both working, and I didn't like to work. I didn't like the 9-to-5. I tried really hard. I was hustling. I was trying to work my way up the corporate ladder. I was working actually at the Mayo Clinic in restorative nursing just here in southeastern Minnesota. And I liked the job, but I just realized within the first couple of years that I was going to get nowhere. Like, no matter how much effort and time I put into it, it just didn't matter. So with our family growing, we were having more and more kids. I was like, I just want to be home with them. I want my wife to be home with them. I'd love to start a home-based business. And so in my free time, I'd go to thrift stores in the area, usually at Goodwill. I'd go to the clearance bin where they had a bunch of books, and I would just grab a handfuls of them, books that I thought might have some good resale value, buy them, you know, like 20, it was like 15, 20 cents a piece, bring them home, and, you know, realize that 99% of them weren't worth any money, and my intuition was way off. And that was frustrating. And so for a while, I did that for a while, but obviously I got discouraged and just kind of threw up my hands. It wasn't actually until I read Stu Weber's book, Barcode Booty. I don't know if you heard of that book or not.
I've not heard of it. Barcode Booty.
Yeah.
And all right. I'm going to have I'm going to put a link to it. Hope that doesn't get me flagged.
Well, check it out. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it was a pretty foundational book for me for all your listeners. They probably, they know that there's technology out there that can help them with arbitrage opportunities, but I had no idea. And so I didn't know you could bring a smartphone into a thrift store and scan barcodes. Like, that was just mind blowing. And so that immediately, you know, scaled up our book selling business. I was able to go in there and buy books that I could be fairly confident would have good resale value and would sell, and it just changed the game for us.
You know, I noticed Brian has a blog, and we'll get to that in a little bit. But one of the things he talks about there is using, you know, databases, old PDAs and A-seller tools. There is nothing as fast. You know, if you're going to get into the book scanning business and you're going to go to a book sale where you have to be elbow to elbow fighting it out because there's scanners, you know, most book sales are just dominated by scanner anymore. You have to have a PDA. A smartphone will not do it. You will not be fast. You'll be done with one book and the guy next to you will have 40 done with a PDA. You agree?
Absolutely. I think that the mobile technology is getting better because with FBA Scan, which is an A-seller tool program, you can download a database onto the phone. So if you're lacking in Wi-Fi or cell phone strength, you can still pull up Amazon data. But I still think that a PDA with a barcode scanner attached to it is going to win you that race, you know, nine times.
I had A-seller tool years ago, and I remember it did books, toys, like maybe some sporting goods and a few other things, you know, and I don't know what it still does today.
Yes, they claim that it's in dozens of categories on Amazon. We haven't really wandered out of the book section with those. We feel like using apps like Scoutify are a little better and more comprehensive when it comes to doing retail arbitrage or scanning in the toy and game department. But you can pull up data, you know, sales data on a variety of different products with the A-seller through a program for sure.
Let's before I go to break, because I can't wait to talk about your business. I think people are going to be like, whoa, you know, this is a young man who understands this. But let's talk about your family. You kind of threw me off the chair because when you told me the number of kids you guys have, you're expecting your – what number is it?
Number 7.
Number 7.
Yeah.
You are creating a business, aren't you?
Either that. I mean,
but it's – it's just so neat because it's a business, it's a family business. Your wife works with you in the business. And so what a great lifestyle business. So would you say you know, I know money is an issue, and I know there's a minimum amount of money everybody needs and all that kind of jazz. But would you say you're in this business for the money or the freedom and lifestyle that it gives? Is that what's your why?
Definitely the freedom and lifestyle. I feel like, you know, with six, almost seven kids, and I just want to maximize my time with them. I want to spend time with them as much as I can now. And then if down the road I want to pursue a career that pulls me out of the home, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 hours a week, that's fine. But for now, I want to do whatever I can to structure my life and my business around my family. And so I think, you know, as you'll soon hear, I've been able to set that up for us.
Yeah, I'm interested can you give me an example of how, you know, something just really worked for you because of your business? So, for example, you know, I don't want to use a sick child or something, but just visiting family where most people just could, oh, I got to race back. Did you have any of those experiences where it's like, thank goodness I made the right decision and went into this business?
Yeah, well, I think it was, I was waking up at like 5:30, 4:45 in the morning, depending on what day, to get off to work, and commuting about a half hour to get there. And then, you know, just working grueling hours and coming home and just feeling exhausted and feeling like my best time, my best energy throughout the day was spent at this job. And it was a good job. I was working with just wonderful people, but I really wanted to be spending my time and my energy on my family. And so I think through the scheme of things, we realized pretty quickly if we wanted to do this big family thing, we wanted to be home as much as possible. And so as soon as we started to get a taste of what Amazon FBA had to offer, we were all in. Like, we were ready to just jump in with both feet, and it was just an amazing thing.
That's really interesting that your wife is on board as much. My wife was raised to go work in an office because that's what her family said that she should do. So this entrepreneur thing is very uncomfortable for her sometimes, you know, because it really is, you know. Your wife an entrepreneur?
I'd consider her the CFO of the company. I'm the CEO. And so she, I mean, without her, the business would fail. Would have been gone because she's kind of the rock from a financial perspective. She's got the good analytical mind, whereas I'm more of a visionary, and I'm more emotional, and I think I have better long-term planning. So I think apart from each other, we probably wouldn't be able to be successful in this space. But together, we're kind of like a powerhouse. I mean,
yeah.
She complements my weaknesses, and I complement her weaknesses and strengths, and we're just like, just this team moving forward. And so she pulls, sometimes I have these visions like, we should go this route, we should do private label. And she's like, you know, from financial perspective, that's not a good, she pulls me back down to earth and helps me focus.
Yeah. The shiny object syndrome gets to you too, huh? I get that. But you know, that's just so neat because you're working from a power position with the two of you, especially when you're both on board. You have the basic premise or outline of where you're going. And yeah, I get it that you veer off every now and then, she pulls you back. But boy, what a great story, and what a great way to live, because you know, hey, this is where we're going. We can't do this. Fourth quarter's coming. We're going to be, you know, working heavy, but then we get to take big breaks and big life changing things. Well, this is great. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to take us to break, because when I come back, I can't wait to do the outline of your business, because I think people are going to be like, oh my goodness, I really need to do this. And can others replicate some of what you're doing? So let's go to break. We'll be right back.
Today's podcast is brought to you by Seller Essentials, essential business solution for online sellers. Whether you sell general merchandise on Amazon or eBay, private label your own product, or if your focus is selling books, wholesale products, or liquidation lots, let Seller Essentials be your online resource for all things e-commerce. Essential resources, essential solutions, Seller Essentials, the internet's premier venue for online professional. Visit SellerEssentials.com for more information. That's SellerEssentials.com.
All right, before we jump back into the podcast, this part of the podcast, I think you really need to take some notes, because we really break down Brian's business as he uses business segments. He's got a couple divisions. He approaches them very similarly. It is a scalable, replicatable, great word, huh? Business model that you can use. And Brian is so generous with his information. He actually breaks it down exactly how he does it and how he's been able to reach the seven-figure business model. So let's get back into the podcast. All right, we're back, and we're talking with Brian Young, who, you know, really It really will impress you just in the way he structured his business. You know, you're not a Harvard MBA who, you know, also studied at, you know, Cornell and these all these fancy things. You're, I mean, a college graduate with the business experience. How did you figure out that you really should structure your business this way? Did you get a mentor? Did you go for coaching? Or did you just read a book?
Yeah, well, books. So I started reading books. I read, you know, Crush It by Gary Vaynerchuk. I read Outliers by Malcolm Gladwell. I read Rich Dad Poor Dad by Kiyosaki. And I mean, the list goes on. I was reading in the beginning there, I was reading two business books a week. I just loved it. Like I couldn't get enough of it. But what it did, what that did to my Amazon business was that it gave me an entrepreneurial mindset that I think is lacking in the online selling world. I think so many sellers are kind of, you know, they own their own job. They're working from the S quadrant. They're self-employed. But I saw this opportunity to do Amazon, but do it from the B quadrant, from the business quadrant. So you're building a business and a system that perpetuates itself. And
well, let's dig deeper on that. Go back to that. I want you to. So again, you're saying that you don't think that most people are operating from an entrepreneurial point of view. They're operating from an employee of a business that they happen to own. Is that what you're saying?
That's kind of the feel that I get just being on the online forums and just speaking with people at conferences that I attend. I feel like, which it's great. Like I'm not knocking it. And if you want to do this business and you want to be a solopreneur, or you and your wife, or you and your husband, you just want to tag team and just do it together and handle all aspects of the business, the sourcing and the shipping and the managerial stuff, then that's great because you can make great money with that kind of a setup. But I just felt like what was kind of void from the conversation was that there's an alternative, and the alternative is build a business system that's bigger than yourself and create good systems so that you can plug people in to do the work, and then you're going to be able to scale beyond what you could do on your own.
Well, as a solopreneur, you're never going to have that four-hour work week that Tim Ferriss chases, right? You're never going to get that as a solopreneur doing it yourself. So yeah, I think you figured out some of that. So, okay, so we have divisions. Brian's business has divisions, okay? And, you know, he chuckles a little bit, but, I mean, here's a young guy who's figured this out, you know, and I'm a big corporate America, so trust me, I get some of this. And it's just really fascinating to me that you have figured some of this out. So let's walk through the book division. The book division continued from you starting sourcing in college, right? It's evolved a little bit, would you say?
Definitely, yeah.
All right, so walk us through that division. It's about 30% of your business, you say, right?
Yeah. So we left books for retail arbitrage. We felt like there was more scalability there. But right after we left, we realized we loved books because books had low acquisition costs. So the cost of goods sold was really small, and the profit margins were huge. Like Greg Murphy would say, the margins in books are meth margins. And it's a great analogy. You can't find profit margins in any other industry except for maybe the illegal drug market. And so we didn't want to leave it all together, but we didn't want to spend the time and the effort into running it because it's hard work. If anybody, you know, listening to your show has sold books before, they know that it's not a get-rich-quick scheme or get-rich-quick business. It's a lot of labor, a lot of manual labor. So we said maybe we could take all of our experience that we have selling books over the last couple of years, and we can create a system that in that system we can hire people to do the sourcing for us, we can hire people to do the listing for us, and, you know, even down the road, hire somebody to manage the whole operation. And then we can completely step out of the book selling business, and we can focus on retail arbitrage or whatever other areas in life and business we wanted to focus on. And so that's what we did. We found somebody to start sourcing books for us.
Okay, so stop there a second.
Sure.
So you were doing it. You created an expertise. You came up with a teachable process. Did you document your process? Did you create a manual almost, or did you just take them out and say, all right, let's go to a book sale?
No, exactly. Yeah, I created a manual. So I wrote a manual, okay. Manual for sourcing, manual for listing. Yep.
Okay, so let's take that as our first golden nugget. If you want to make a professional organization, and this is what Dan Metters has said from you know, a huge multi-million dollar seller, same way. When they're training, they actually have training manuals. That's what you're describing, because then you get the consistency. So you took it a step further. You have two different versions of training, right?
Yeah. So
for books. Go ahead.
Yeah, so we put together training manuals, and we actually put together some training videos too, to train these people in, and kind of how it worked. The first guy, we trained him in as a book sourcer, so he went out. We paid him $1 a book, that met our criteria, but we also, put within him the desire to someday kind of manage the whole operation himself. So we saw him not only as a book sourcer, but we saw that he had like the managerial traits, intangibles that would make him a good manager. So we're kind of like taking him and shaping him and crafting him to be our future book sales manager and oversee the whole thing.
Okay, so $1 a book that meet your criteria, and your criteria you establish saying, hey, under X number, 400,000 and lower, condition must be good or very good, must not be highlighted, blah, 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 and must be in the PDA. And did you program them right in the PDAs?
No, we found that setting the PDAs up to automatically, give you an alert to buy a book or not was just really inconsistent. So we made it real simple. We said we want to be able to sell the book in its current condition for $11.95 or more. We want the book to have a sales rank of 5 million or better. And we want you to be able to buy the book for $2 or less. And if it meets those three criteria points, go ahead and buy it.
So then you have $3 into the book, mm-hmm. plus whatever incidental expenses you have. Yep. Let's assume Amazon's going to take a third, right? So roughly, so that gets you $8. In theory, you're looking at about $5 profit per book. Is that what you figure?
Yeah.
At a minimum.
Sure. Yep. Well, so we pay $1 for the book sourcer, and then it's 25 cents for the guy who lists the books.
Okay. So we got a little more cost.
Yeah.
So 25 cents for a lister.
Yep. So the sourcer will source the books, and it'll bring it over to the lister's house, because the lister – one of the perks of being a book lister for our company is that you can work from home, and with the programs we give them, they're able to list, usually between 75 and 100 books per hour. So the money's good at 25 cents per book. And then when they're finished listing it, they ship it off to Amazon from their place.
Okay, so they take that on. And a contractor position would be perfect because they can do it at their leisure. You're not setting the time. You have some standards they must meet, but outside of that, it's really their business, right? They can kind of do it as they please.
Yep.
So so really, you're not touching anything, any part of this system.
No, I mean, my wife, she runs payroll, and so she pays everybody every other week on Monday, but that's it. I mean, I'll chat with the book sales manager here and there. But, yeah, we're completely out of it. We never see the inventory, passive.
And so what happens now? You have – that's only one sourcer. What's one sourcer able to source for you in a given week?
Yeah, it depends. I mean, so we have sourcers in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. We have one full-time guy out of Milwaukee. And then we have another guy who sources books for us. He's a trucker, a coast-to-coast trucker. And he drives for 6 hours. The company that he works for says he needs to take an hour break every 6 hours. And so he just schedules his breaks, for thrift stores and book sales along the way. And he's crushing it. But it depends. I mean, some weeks these guys are bringing in 1,000 books a week. Some weeks they're bringing in 500. But we really leave it up to them. There's really no criteria. We treat them as independent contractors. We just say we'd like, these criteria to be met, and you can buy as many or as little books as you like.
So they're hustling on their own. Whatever effort they want, they get the reward. Yeah. How did you find them?
So first guy was a brother-in-law, and then the rest of the people just kind of fell into place, whether they were like acquaintances of a friend. One guy actually came up to us. I was meeting my book sales manager in the cities. We were going to meet kind of in the beginning stages of this business, and a guy came up. 20-something-year-old, and he's like, what are you guys doing? And we kind of explained it to him. He seemed really interested. So our book sales manager set up an appointment with him and interviewed him and gave him a job. And actually now he's one of our best book sourcers in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area.
So, and how many sourcers do you have?
So 4 sourcers and 4 listers currently.
Okay, so 4 sourcers. And the listers are somewhat close to the sourcer some way, right? They must be.
Yep.
So how did you find a lister? I mean, similar way, just word of mouth, kind of somebody knows somebody, somebody's related to somebody. Hey, I need a job.
Yeah, it's been really easy. And I know that people that I've talked to have had trouble finding reliable people. And so we put together job descriptions for all of our positions. So we feel confident that if we needed to find somebody that didn't just happen to fall into our laps, we'd have a good, objective criteria for that employee or for that independent contractor, and we can market it you know, a variety of ways. But yeah.
Wow. And so I'm going to completely flush through my thinking on this. So we found a sourcer, they're sourcing. Are you helping them identify locations to source? Are you putting out a newsletter? Are you doing some way to communicate with them? Hey, have you tried this? They're a book sale. Are they using Book Sale Finder? What are they using?
Yeah, we do. I mean, we have a closed Facebook group that's just for my team. And so on there, I'm always, well, I used to post a lot of things like that, like estate sales in there. I'd do some research and find some things in their area. We subscribe to BookSalesFound.com, which is kind of like Book Sale Finder, but not as popular. And I think you pay $30 a month for that service. But that helps them. They're able to, on their own, log in and find the smaller, like medium-sized book sales that are happening in their area that aren't making the national site. So that really helps.
So we found the person. We really helped them identify some places where they, once they learn that skill, and I think that's part of the real key, is you taught them, hey, here's how you find these things. Now they can probably do it on their own. That's another way to really get passive, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have these independent listers. Now, the listers automatically send in to Amazon, meet the criteria, and they can sign in to your to whatever listing service you're using to send it in there. How are they buying the books? How are they paying for them?
So how it works is they buy the books on their own credit cards or with their own money. All of our sources have their own credit cards. And so what they do is they buy the books, and then every 2 weeks we'll pay them, we'll reimburse them for the books that they purchased, and then add their commissions on top of that and give them that money. Yep.
Well, what a great business model. And I think it's, you know, Greg Murphy and I've had this discussion so much. Books are such, they're long tail. Mm-hmm. They typically are. You're going to sell some immediately, but generally speaking, but boy, once you get a pipeline of them, they will just churn out forever. And it's such a great, great foundation of building your business. So well done. Well done. And just so well thought out. I love the close Facebook group. It's just such a great way to teach people. Great way to keep your training situation there. And if it changes, you only have to change it in one place. Everything about it just makes a lot of sense. Just really well done. Okay, so you now have 70% something else. Mm-hmm. And is all – well, let's talk about the 70%. Is it retail ARB? Is it online ARB? Is it wholesale? Is it private label? Or is it a combination?
It was a combination maybe last year this time, but now it's all retail arbitrage.
Okay, so retail arb with six kids and one on the way. Who's sourcing?
we took the model that we use for books, and we started to apply it to our retail arbitrage business to a lot of success. So there's a guy that we went to church with, and just the straight shooter. I could just tell he had tons of integrity and he had really high work ethic. And we said, we want to do what we can to get him to work for us, because where we see the value, where we see the opportunity when it comes to retail arbitrage is in negotiating with store management. And I can talk, and I'm probably a decent negotiator, but I'm not the best. And so we kind of saw some of those intangibles in him, and we said, we'd like you to come work for us. We started him at $600 a week just so we could get out of the manufacturing business he's working in, because he's working like 60 hours a week, had a wife and a child at home. So we knew he needed to have some stability. And that was in January that we started him of this year. And then what happened was we just give him a budget every week to spend. And actually it was a budget that both him and I shared. So in my mind, I thought, okay, he will go to the Twin Cities to do sourcing in the week, and I'll hit up some local stores. And then together we'll pool it all together. We'll hit our budget. And we'll do the shipment together, and you know, life will be great. Well, his side of things really took off. In fact, he was establishing relationships with store managers at Sam's Clubs and at Walmarts in the Twin Cities that really started to pay off in a big way. In fact, he would exceed the budget every week. So he basically sourced me out of my position as a secondary sourcer. And right now he's making $700 a week. He gets a 20% commission after the sale.
Okay, so let's pause there, because I have two questions.
Sure.
Let's answer the commission first, and then I want to go back to his relationship with the store manager. So let's talk about the commission first. So 20% of what he buys, 20% of profit, 20% of what it sells for. Walk us through that.
Yeah, 20% of what it sells, what he buys that sells. So
okay, so let's say he spends $100 that's going to sell for $300 magically, right?
Mm-hmm.
What are you giving him the 20% on?
Yeah, so net profit. So here's how it works. We wanted to give him some stability, so we give him $700 up front no matter what. And then if his 20% net off things that have actually sold on Amazon that he's sourced exceeds the $700, we give him some extra. Otherwise, he just keeps the $700. And
okay, so it's a draw versus commission, but yep. It's a minimum draw. Mm-hmm. And so that's a great plan. So you're saying, hey, if you bring in $100,000 net profit, you're going to get, 20% of that, and less the 700 times 4 or 5 weeks what we paid you, boom, here's your net above that, correct?
Exactly, yep.
Okay. And net profit would take out Amazon fees, cost of goods, miscellaneous, built-in expenses, warehousing, labels, boxes, and all that kind of jazz?
Yep, and then we even look at returned items. So if some of the items that he had sold previously were returned, we deduct the commission, like he lost that commission off his future check. So, yeah, we're really trying to get down to, like, the true net and pay him off that.
So it's really a profit-sharing plan. And so a real profit-sharing plan, the way you're describing it, really – it's unlimited income, really. I mean, in theory, I guess there is a limit because your body can only work 24 hours a day. But in theory, it's not a capped income, right?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm.
Wow. How do you handle the overhead? You must have administrative costs. You guys cost money, right? There's payroll costs. There's other things. How do you handle that?
Well, I mean, we're still – my wife and I and family, we're still bootstrapping. And, we're trying to take every single dollar that we possibly can and reinvest it back into this business because we see the potential and the opportunity there. So, I mean, what we do is we just basically take enough money to put food on the table. We take enough money out of the business to keep my wife around and reinvest the rest.
Okay, so that's golden nugget number 2, 3, wherever we were, is reduce your expenses. That was my advice to this couple, a great couple that are doing well. They didn't have enough money to source as much as they want to, yet she could find 100% return items. I'm like, man, you're special. If you have no limit to the number of 100% return items, keep buying them, right? And so my advice to them was scale back their lifestyle a little bit just for a certain period of time and use that additional funds and multiply it each month. And so sounds like you're really doing well with that. Okay, so I really appreciate you answering that. I think a lot of people are afraid to handle the profit sharing. So you're showing this guy how much money you're making?
Yeah, he sees it all. We're really transparent with him. And I feel like for a guy that was making $14, $15 an hour doing manufacturing, I've really kind of taken him under my wing and I'm giving him the entrepreneurial mindset, but we've really given him a raise, but he's earned it. So I think that's creating
win-win. Yeah,
it's loyalty. So I know that he's seeing all the numbers, and I know a lot of other sellers are kind of worried that, they might be creating a direct competitor, but I think he's around for as long as we keep him around because, we've built in so much loyalty into our relationship.
I wonder if it's a generational thing. I mean, I know, our parents never shared how much money they made with the kids. I mean, that was just taboo in most houses on my generation, from the previous generation. My kids know that, we did fairly well. I wonder if that's a generational thing. I think, that transparency that Chris Green always talks about, I wonder if that's part of it. I think it's well done, and I think you should share it, and I think it's obviously working well for you. Of course, he could go start his own business any day he wants, but, there's risk. And with you, there's no risk. You're paying for everything, right?
Exactly. Yep. And I think he's as typical. I mean, I think the typical American, I think I just read a study that said the average American only has about $30 left after he or she gets their paycheck and pay all their bills. And so there's not much savings going on. And so even though with a book selling business, you could buy a scanner and you could buy your first bunch of books and you could do all that for under $500. $500 would be a significant investment to most people.
So, yeah, a year and a half of income, right?
Exactly. So I think you're right. I think there's a lot of unnecessary fear out there in regards to this issue.
Sure. So last question on the retail arb. He's using your credit card, I take it, or debit card, whatever?
Yep, we just put his name. His name on our cards, and he uses it.
Okay, all right. So but in the book way, they have to take the risk. In this scenario, they don't. And who is processing the inventory that you're bringing in the retail? Because you're bringing in huge quantities at this point.
Yeah, so worked into his contract. Not only does he source it, but he also lists and ships it all out too.
No kidding, right out of his house.
Well, actually, we have a home office. We have a ranch style home down here, like the southeastern plains of Minnesota. And we have just a big office right when you walk in. So he just comes once a week to put together the shipment and ship it out. And That,
oh, great. Yeah. So you know all the bills come, everything's due, boom, it's easy to do, and you can reconcile. What a great system. And right now he's the only sourcer that you have?
Yeah, last year over the holidays we hired some more people just here and there to pick up items for us, but yeah, he's our only retail guy.
Okay, but it's scalable, right? You could replicate this, right? Is that your plan?
Yep.
And again, you have a right, we'll go back to what the foundation that you established. You have a training manual, you have training videos, you have a closed Facebook group where all this communication happens, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, when he's taking advantage of sales and things like that, how is he getting communicated with that? So, you know, is there some communication that you guys are doing? Are you in sourcing groups, or is there some way you're getting, or is he just out there hitting a Walmart, scanning, hitting Rite Aid, scanning, hitting CVS, scanning?
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, we've been hitting Walmarts really hard right now because, like, I mean, they're always going through, they're always turning over inventory. They're always bringing in new stuff. So it seems like there's always canceled out inventory that's just sitting on shelves somewhere that need to be taken care of. And so when Jonah goes in, he's like, hey, you know, we have an online sales company. We buy things, we resell them on Amazon. If you'd be willing to come down in price on some of the items in your clearance section, I'd be happy to take, you know, a ton of them off your hands. Happy to spend a couple $1,000s here today. And over the course of time, like really working on these store managers and earning their trust, we're now to the point where, you know, they're calling us and they're saying, yeah, come in. And we kind of just go down the rows with them or with somebody that, you know, that they've appointed to give authority to. And we're able to negotiate on price on things and fill up the vehicles and everybody's happy. A win-win.
And so, you know, I've had some success with that too, depending on the store, right? And Mindy Lipsick had said that his experience is that the really strong Walmart stores have the most ability to negotiate because they turn over inventory so quickly. It's good for them to turn over stale inventory because they're going to put it back with something that's going to make them money, right?
Yeah.
Have you seen that same experience?
Yeah. In fact, I think it's the biggest Walmart in the Midwest, happens to be in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. And they had – how it works is every month, every Walmart's given a clearance allotment. And so they can take that clearance allotment and they can clearance out basically anything in the store that they think needs to be moved. But once they've depleted those funds, they have to wait until the next month until their next, you know, budget comes in. And so this store was like – most stores, it was kind of like around a million or two that they'd have. And that's everything. So if they wanted to do a sale on an end cap in the baby section, you know, that would take away from this budget. But this store, I think they had like $15 million to spend this month. And literally it was, yeah, we have plenty. And it really, what we do is we're trying to, I mean, the Walmart stores they're kind of between a rock and a hard place because retail shelf space is premium real estate. Like, they're so systematic. They have every square inch of space on all their shelves, like figured out how much it's worth per day. And they don't want stale inventory sitting around because it's taking up that space that could be otherwise used to sell product. But at the same time, they want to protect the brands that they represent, or maybe they're getting pressure from the brands to maintain their price requirements. And so we come in and we say, we're kind of like the mafia. We'll quietly, discreetly, and professionally get rid of all this inventory for you. You'll never see it again. And that way they can get rid of this stuff that's just sitting around on their shelves and yet not have a bad reputation with the brands that are trying to sell their product and maintain, you know, customer satisfaction.
And again, it's going into those stores frequently, being respectful and, you know, saying hi. And once they get to know you over time, that's how those relationships really work.
Exactly. And so when we go to the store, when we were wearing nice dress clothes, we have business cards, we're professional because we have a professional selling company and we want them to know that this isn't a joke, that this is something we take seriously.
That's great. And I just say well done. You know, just really impressive on the way you structured it, the way you've outsourced it. So you spend your time on other things, right? So, I mean, obviously that you're looking at big vision stuff and, you know, you're handling the money. So, I mean, or your wife is, but I mean, it's, you got a lot of moving pieces. So you're not packing boxes most of the time. I'm sure you step in when you need to. What are you spending your time on now, Brian?
So I love coaching. I love helping people define the entrepreneurial vision that we've got a hold of. Like, I think for me, one of the biggest wins, more than profit, would be to help a family set up their own home-based business, come together, kind of like we have, and just experience the joy of being able to maximize their time with their children and with their spouse. So that's kind of where I'm at. So I wake up every morning, and if I'm not working on the Amazon selling business, I'm writing and blogging and creating video content just to help families out, essentially.
A great segue. Great segue into ProfitSourcing.com. Right. So that's a blog that you started. And it looks, as I was telling you when we started, I was reading. I was like, wow, this is a lot of detail. I just can't believe how much information is in this blog. And you're up to post number 40. You started it when? So tell us how that came about.
Yeah, I think I started it back in the spring sometime.
March. Yeah, it looks like March. Yeah. Yep.
So it hasn't been very long, just a handful of months. And I just was like, I'm going to start documenting, you know, what I've been through. People kept asking questions. How did you do this? And what do you recommend for that? And so I was like, I'll just start writing articles and posting them on this blog. And then, you know, maybe people will find it useful and helpful.
Well, you also have videos. I'm seeing videos now. So you've evolved into videos, right? And are these training videos, or what are they?
So there's a lot of demand for my book sourcing and book listing training manuals. That people want those. In fact, I was in a Facebook group, and people were like, "Oh, how do you train your people in?" And I said, "Well, I made a manual," and people immediately were like, "I'll give you money for that manual. I want to do the same thing you're doing." And it was just like incredible. I had to take a step back because people are trying to throw their money at me. So I'm like, "Well, maybe there's some demand for this." And so I started giving away for free, and I use the blog as kind of a platform for that. But yeah.
Well, and you also have a book.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's talk about your book. Tell me about this.
So two books, actually. The book that's for free is at ProfitSourcing.com/free, and that's the title is The Automated Amazon Book Selling Business. It's also available on Kindle as well if you'd like it there too, but it's absolutely free. You sign up for the newsletter. I'll send you 90 days worth of training videos included. Just to help you get started and help answer some of those questions as you get going selling books online. And then if you're still hungry for more, we have a book called Book Flipping. And that's just a much more in-depth analysis of not only how to start a book selling business, so it's book selling 101, but it's also how to turn that book selling business into an automated source of income, similar to what we've done.
Yeah, I think that's where, you know, there have been a lot of books about book selling and all that kind of jazz. But I think that where they would fall short would be that automation, where you've been able to basically walk your way out of it. And again, I think most people would be uncomfortable with it, but it sounds like you've taken a lot of the risk because they're not signing into your Amazon account, right? You're using third-party software?
Yes, yeah, so they list with a third-party software, but they actually do go on to my Amazon account. But Amazon gives you the ability to set up user permissions, so when the book listers come in, they're only able to see the things that are relevant to what they're going to do. You know, they can't see our bank account information. They can't see sales. They really can't touch any of that stuff. But they are coming onto our account. So, I mean, you do need to hire people that you can trust because they do have access to some of that information and they're able to, you know, it could cause problems. But for the most part, most of the risk is taken out because they're really blocked from doing anything that could really damage your business.
You know, and again, I think that this is the kind of business, I mean, I just think of a stay-at-home mom or somebody like that, right, where they're, you know, scanning books and putting them up for you. What a great place to do between the kids are sleeping and that kind of thing. They can work overnight. They can work whatever hours they want. Quite frankly, you really don't care as long as the stuff is done by X date, right?
Exactly. And if they can make $20 an hour doing it, I mean, we're happy to pay them that, and they're happy to make it. And yeah, it's been great. I mean, we have a variety of we have a stay at home mom that works for us. She's actually the wife of the coast to coast trucker I was telling you about. So a husband comes home with a bunch of books, and then, you know, heads off. And while she's home alone throughout the week, she's able to list these books and get them out and make a little extra money. The guy in Milwaukee, he loves paintball and outdoor activities, and so he'll buy books. He's also listing the books as well. And then he can spend the other 4 days out of the week just going out and doing what he wants to do, pursuing his hobby and his passions in life that aren't business related.
So he's crushing it for 3 days, crushing, buying, listing really over 3 days, and then he's done for the week?
Yeah. Yeah. So he's pulling in some good money, and he's able to free up a big chunk. So he's not looking to steal the business. He doesn't care about selling books. He doesn't care about entrepreneurism. He just wants to go out there and play some paintball, and this job that we've given him provides him that opportunity. Yeah, so most weeks he has 3 or 4 days off to pursue those hobbies.
So his freedom again is his why, right? I mean, it's just such a neat, that's such a neat thing. And so you you have these training classes too and videos, right? And so this is all on your site. Book flipping the book I'm looking at, mm-hmm. and then I see something down here that says training book. Oh, there's a platinum edition. Included in the plat is the gold edition and coaching calls. So you're actually doing personal coaching too.
Yep. So if you buy the gold membership, you'll get not only access to the book flipping book, the 240-page manual, 101 and 201, how to sell books online. You also get access to all my training videos and more. I think there's like 40 or 50 videos on there right now. And the neat thing about these is they're generic training videos. And so if you are planning on putting together your own book sourcing or book listing team, you can go to the YouTube video, you can copy the unlisted link, and you can send it to your prospective book sourcer or book lister, and then they can watch that video. And I don't mention the Profit Sourcing brand in there at all. I'm not trying to get them to be entrepreneurs. It's just straight, like, this is how you list a book and condition a book, that sort of thing. And so the people that have been purchasing this course have been giving overwhelming feedback that this is exactly what they're looking for. They can scroll through all these videos. They can pick out a menu of training videos they'd like to give to a prospective book sourcer or book lister. They can grab the book sourcing training manual in a PDF format, attach that to the email, send it off, and then their work is basically done. All the basic questions that these people will have will be answered in those videos, and they can just get to work.
You can almost even put it behind a private Facebook group, right? And then that way you can control who gets in there.
Exactly.
So is this I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. So because book flipping is really no different than Shopkins flipping, in essence, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it really isn't. Other than there's, you know, 8 levels of Shopkins where there's, you know, 15 zillion books, right? A little bit of a different scale size. But is the concept of training similar – for book selling to retail arm?
Yeah, I think it just boils down to figure out what you're doing down to like the minutia, write it down, make a training manual out of it, and then give it to somebody else. Like, what I encourage people to do is, you know, what part of the business do you like the least? And if they say listing, then I say, okay, well, sit down over the course of the next couple of weeks and write down like every single step in the listing process, and maybe write a Q&A section of what will soon be a training manual. And then at the end of those 2 weeks, you'll have all the system and the information necessary to be able to train somebody else and to do that thing, so you can step out and focus on the other areas of the business you enjoy doing.
Or you can just buy your book where they don't have to do it because you already did it for them. I'll be honest with you. I always say when I buy from a coach or I buy from even a conference like that, I'm buying time. I need to buy time because that's the one thing. I got money. I've got places to go, but I don't have enough time. So I just think this is great. Well, it's really well done again, and I just think it's great that you're helping other people. I noticed the $5 donation that people can do to help others, and I think that's a very cool thing to do, and I encourage people to go see what I'm talking about on ProfitSourcing.com, and I'll have a link to it. Okay, so you had mentioned a couple books, Crush It, Outliers. Anything else that you would recommend for our listeners to help them keep filling their head with good, solid content and really sharpen that entrepreneur? I love what you said about sharpening that entrepreneurial spirit and really moving themselves from that solopreneur block over into a business person's block. So any other books that you could recommend or podcasts?
Yeah, I think the ones I mentioned. I also like Entree Leader by Dave Ramsey. I think, I didn't really know who he was. I couldn't really get a good feel on his persona on the radio, but he's a hardcore businessman. And so that book, Entree Leader, really pulls back the curtain on how he operates his businesses. I've read so many books on business, I read all of Donald Trump's books before he became a presidential candidate. Loved the entrepreneurial hustle that he puts forth in those books. I read Howard Schultz's book, the CEO, founder of Starbucks, Jack Welch, the GE guy, like just collecting all this entrepreneurial insight. It really helped for me I love the podcast and the books that are written in the FBA online selling genre, but I also think it's helpful to step out from there and collect the wisdom and insight from all these business owners from all across all the different marketplaces and learn from them.
You know, it was a common theme talked about at that conference in the smaller groups that I was in, is that, you know, we are a kind of a, not an incestuous group, but there's a small group. We really are not very large when you look at us as a whole. You know, when you step back and you enlarge your pond, as Ram Charan would say, right, you're a small fish in a big pond, just get a bigger pond. There are just huge opportunities and, as you say, different thought processes, and it's not so limiting, and it does make you think different. I just think it's great advice. Okay, so, you know, this podcast goal is to help people move forward, and I think you've gave some amazing, amazing tips. I told everybody they would be impressed, and you did not let us down. Give us, you got to have something else to help us move forward. So I always say that people, you know, I caught myself the other day saying it's easy to sell 100 items on Amazon a day. It's really not. It's 100 items a week is the phrase I should be saying. eBay, it's really hard to sell 100 items a week. Mm-hmm. But on Amazon, it really is pretty easy, but you're going to limit your growth. You're stuck. You're going to get to that, you know, $10,000 to $20,000 level, and you're not going to make really a great income. How do you get past that? So I'm looking for something that you could give us to help people move past that point.
Yeah, a great question. I think two things. I think you need to focus and you need to be content. And so what I mean by focus is you need to pick the one area that you want to sell in, whether it's wholesale, private label, you know, online arbitrage, retail arbitrage, thrift, liquidation, books, whatever it is. Pick the one area, focus on it, get good at it, and then I'd recommend that you systematize and outsource it, and then you can focus on another area. And what I mean by being content is I think a lot of people fail as business owners because as they see their sales grow, they feel like they're justified in purchasing luxurious items and increasing their quality of life. But I would just encourage you, especially the first few years that you're starting out, just be content with what you have and really live frugal a life now. And then later down the road, you can cash out when your business is really bringing in some profits. And it won't be such a deterrent growth.
That delayed gratification, very difficult, right? Yeah. It's very income creep, right? You start to see all your friends buy a new car, so what do? Hey, I got to get a new car too. My car doesn't look so good next to theirs. So I think that's great sound advice. Yeah. Brian, best way to get in touch with you is probably through ProfitSourcing.com?
Yep, ProfitSourcing.com. Or you can find me on Facebook if you search for Book Flipping. That's our Facebook group. But happy to connect with you there as well.
Yeah, and I will have connections for all that for people. Man, Brian, I just appreciate you taking the time tonight, giving us great information, great advice, really breaking down your business model for us. Just so impressed. I wish you and your family nothing but the best.
Thank you. It's been fun. Thanks for having me on.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the E-Commerce Momentum Podcast. All the links mentioned today can be found at ecommercemomentum.com under this episode number. Please remember to subscribe and like us on iTunes.